can bring the TV, you can bring the beer. We'll wave our flags from the front porch. There's a party on in here. But it's a football night. But it's a football night. We can gather all the friends all around the zoo. There's not a better thing to do.
With us tonight, we have a what I consider a Sporting Kansas City legend of his own. Chief Communications Officer, PR Guru, Rob Thompson, better known as Robo to everybody, who probably knows more about this team than anybody, with possible exception of Chet.
Oh, I think I got Chet really hit. Really beat.
He might argue with you on that.
I don't think so.
I'll go with him if he arms wrestles you.
Correct.
Yeah, but I'll go with you since you're here right now.
Well, Robo, you got to understand what a great compliment that was. You do understand that, right? You got that?
Okay. We'll see how this goes first.
Robo has been with the team since 97, right?
Started in 97, correct.
And been sometimes the lone PR guy and chief bottle washer and everything else, right?
Yep, I think I've overseen every department except sales at some point, so I know... lots of stuff that's been gone on within the organization, but so it's been a great ride. And
Robo and I talked about this the other day about doing this because I got a little behind the scene. I was helping with a photograph the other day with the team photo for the 2019 Sporting Kansas City. It is a recreation of the 1999 Kansas City Wizards team photo at the Kansas City Zoo, and if I understand correctly, you were the creative genius behind that, Robo.
Yeah, well, some people beg to differ. So in 99, our team was 8-24 that season. Not happy times. Well, I'm just saying, so to get everyone to go to the zoo in their full kits wasn't the easiest thing in the world. Bob Gainsler had just been on board for maybe a couple months that time, and he was straight soccer through and through, and I still talk to Coach Gainsler at least every 2 weeks.
That's awesome.
But we had some characters on that team as well, and back then it was a labor of love for these players that when they played. They weren't in it for the salaries, they weren't in it for anything else, but the fact they had passion for soccer. So, but we were struggling that year, so it wasn't very fun to put everyone in their kits, riding a little tram to the elephant exhibits in the middle of the day. It was a hot day, if I remember correctly, and I remember one tall, redheaded, goateed gentleman on our team wasn't... overly thrilled, but
Cody,
so be it.
No.
It was Cody Bradley.
So no, but you know, those days were great, and I think personalities have changed immensely over the years. But so is play on the field. We can talk about that later about the difference of those teams to compare to the teams of today in MLS. But still, we've always had great people on our team and organization over the years at the Wizards and Sporting Kansas City. And so it was no different. I mean, it's still fun. And people want to give you a little razzing here and there, but it's all in good nature. And people, when they were there both times, everyone was great and had fun. And the Elephants cooperated, so that was always a plus.
I have one quick question because he was my former soccer coach growing up, Mark Santel.
Oh, yeah.
Was he there for the elephant photo?
I typically don't like St. Louisians that much, but
he was a
very, very, very nice guy. Right, he was not there. He was here in 01, so he missed that picture, but he was a very, very, very nice guy. We've always had good guys on our team.
Unfortunately, hating on St. Louis, this is the wrong podcast for that. As much as I would love to do it.
Cody is outnumbered, shockingly.
It's weird
in this city to be outnumbered as a...
And Allie can take him all in a row.
Right. Yeah,
that's probably true.
Okay, Robo, I think it's a good place to start. Okay, what was the reception like from the zoo staff back in, 99?
Well,
compared to how they treat you maybe.
Yeah, so I can tell you that. That's an easy one.
Yeah.
Back in the... Kansas City Sporting Career 1.0. So, our Q factor wasn't high, and people enjoyed going to the games, certainly, but if you ask them the next day what the score was, they might not know, and if you ask them who their favorite player was, if it wasn't Preki, they might not have an answer. And then they said, do you like going to the games? I said, sure. But so it was just much different. I mean, Arrowhead was the wrong facility for us, although we've created lots of great memories there.
Oh, yes.
We can all listen to all old games that we can – recollect about cheering and stuff, but it really wasn't. It was too stoic, and back then we had so many midweek games, and the season was condensed, and so the crowds weren't great. But as a business, it wasn't great. Again, we had a front office of 13 people when I first started, and that grew a little bit. But my marketing budget back then was around you know, $10,000, $12,000 for a season. And that's just tough to navigate through. And you know, again, we were all going a million different directions trying to keep our head above water. So the reception of the Zoo was, what? Who? Okay, I guess we'll do this. I mean, we, you know, the year,
right. Yeah.
The year before, 2 years before, we were at Nelson Art Gallery, and so we kind of explained. Now it's much different. The Zoo, who's a great sponsor for this game coming up, has many fans that are sporting fans, and actually were stopped en route a couple times by some people that had noticed us because we were all wearing jerseys again
all
this
right,
time.
All right.
That's cool.
Taking photos and screaming, and actually Busio got it the biggest of the cheers, which is different. Different day and age. So
it was probably his friend.
Yeah, it was probably, probably a fifth grade class trip.
He's easily identifiable from a distance also.
He is. So, yeah, correct. Well, so is Zuzi. I bet over the years I've taken probably over 1,000 photos of Zuzi with other people's phones. So.
Busio is a favorite of the high school set. So
he's a great person. Great, great. And we wish him the best of luck right now at the 17s.
You said 13 in the front office and 99. What exactly is that today?
I don't know. We're over 150.
Okay.
Amazing.
Well, today. I was just looking at the team photo from 99, and there was 7 people that were not players in that team photo. So coaches and the other staff. Today, and the photo that was just taken the other day, there was one that was more or less just the team, and then there was one that was everybody. And there was something like 25 non-players in that photo.
Right, yeah.
It's just amazing the guys who were
that was that staff. Was the group. So for better or worse, that's who we were stuck with, and we were together all the time. That group, you know, we traveled. I mean, back then preseason was 6 straight weeks in one area, and most time was in Bradenton, Florida. So you knew everything about everyone, and so it was much different, much more intimate. But again, it was while there was great memories, and I could tell you lots of different stories about those players and those times. As a business, as a entertainment product, it's much, much, much better now.
Who would have been your choice as a roommate back then?
Oh, 99? Let's see.
Not the redhead with the goatee?
Well, now I could pick his brain and try to pitch him some
he
stuff.
He probably
but,
retired early. Anyway.
Probably not Mo Johnston. Probably was, maybe because he was probably not in the room that often. I don't know. There's a lot. You know, Chris Klein was there, and I think that was his second year with us, and he was what a great guy he is, and,
mm-hmm.
and
another St. Louis.
That's right. I do like St. Louis.
St. Louis does breed very talented soccer players.
That's right, and we really hope they get a team so we can have a great rivalry with them. And,
yes,
and we really really back that and are strong advocates for that for sure.
They look like they're in a good position at the moment.
They've fingers crossed. Yes, they've you know, and sometimes it's better to be last in things or later on because. Mm-hmm. If you look at our league, and I don't think this is any secret, but the founding 10 teams really need to step up their games in many areas. And I think that's a league, you know, initiative that they want to do and put attention to that. But you know, we were fortunate to rebrand and go through what we did, you know, with the new ownership group and starting in 2010 when we really put an emphasis and focus on that to where we are because we've now, you know, we were truthfully back in the old Wizards. We were, you know, the bottom of the league in many metrics, and now certainly that's not the case.
Well, you mentioned the
rebrand,
and I think it's interesting because, you know, speaking of those founding 10 teams and then kind of falling off in different ways, how did Sporting do it right?
Well, I'm the biggest proponent of you make your own luck, and so certainly there was luck and fortune involved, but it was a kind of a perfect storm. First of all, I can tell you that Commissioner Garber in 2001 came to our offices at Arrowhead and talked about contraction. And see if we were even viable and set up publicly to, after the rebrand, saying we were not only the most successful rebrand or new version in MLS history, but maybe sports history. And so it's great to see that connection, that difference that took place. But, you know, I think it started with the vision. Vision's a big word for us. And we were patient with it, not trying to rush through things. And whether it was from changing the name, the look, we knew we wanted to get a new stadium, and the owners also knew we needed a new name.
Were you on board with that team name at the time?
So the story is this. The team name was we hired a firm. So it was 3 of us in this meeting and hired a firm and told them what we were looking at. And, you know, went from we wanted to make sure we dealt with both sides of the state line. We wanted to be communal. We wanted to be inclusive. And so they came back and were so excited to present to us and said, okay, we have your name. It's great. We're so excited. You're now the Kansas City Bees. And we're like, whoa.
What?
Before we yell at you, first of all, let's take ownership that we must have made a horrific mistake in explaining what we're looking for, because that's the opposite of what we, our intentions were. We are not going to be the Bees. You're fired, first of all. We're not going to be the Bees. We're going to figure this out on our own. And so it was a help. It helped to know what we didn't want. And then that further put a stamp on, okay, that's not who we are. We need to be, you know, again. Be,
yeah. Wow.
So that's where it started. And so, again, that was probably in 2008, maybe, because it takes a while to do a rebrand because you're working with Adidas and the league and some other entities. So the rebrand happened. But before that, we you know, had four different stadium sites that we looked at and wanted to go after. And then we also needed to fix what we had on the field and a different product. And so all these things came in place. But it was also the genesis of social media. So one big thing we want to be transparent and want to be inclusive. And so our tone and prose matched that, because that was the very beginning of Twitter. And if you remember Kai Kamara, one of the very first things that I had on Twitter, when he invited everyone for a snowball fight. And that became who we were, and we did that in many different instances, and that worked. And then with the rebrand of the name, with the summer of soccer that year, with the World Cup and the U.S.'s great success and the exciting games at Power and Light, we played Manchester United after that. And
Chad Johnson.
Well, many people came to the Man U game at Arrowhead, most of them wearing red. If you guys remember correctly, that game was competitive. In fact, Jimmy Conroy got a red card, and we weren't allowed to substitute someone back in, which is unheard of in a friendly. And so J.B. Arnault scored first, and then Jimmy got the red card and a penalty kick. They scored that, and then Kai Kamara hit one. If Vieira was in place then, it might not have counted, because I think it was very close to being over, but a header off the
just a touch
off the crossbar off and 2-1, and we held on and we played every one of our guys. There's a picture I remember of Graham Zuzzi with a shaved head and Matt Beasler looking like he's 10 years old and there. We even played Sunil Chetri. I mean,
Sunil Chetri.
But he was one of the all-time leading scorers for his national team history. Yeah. But the crowd started cheering for us and really having pride for Kansas City soccer, and our phones rang off the hook the next day, and we got this whole new influx of new fans and new people, new contacts, and they're all younger. And so while we didn't, the biggest difference, I think, is we didn't, speaking of vision, back in the Wizards, we were really just trying to keep seeing what we could do by the next game. So if we had a Saturday game on Thursday, we'd say, oh my gosh, we have no halftime show, what should we do? And someone would throw out, we need to have Frisbee dogs. Great idea. Can we get them for under $100? We'll try. Okay, go run with that. I mean, and that's how we operated. And that's just not a way to operate a business. To back then, if you said, who's your core market? Who's your demographic? Of the 13 people in our front office, you'd probably get 13 answers. We devalued our ticket in many ways. We wanted families and kids to come, but they weren't really resonating with our players. And so it was just a different feel. But again, it was, you know, created many great memories for everyone, but it just wasn't sustainable. You know, they're just in bits and pieces, not a all-inclusive where they're part of our club.
So you mentioned the Kai Kamara snowball fight, and, you know, there's been April Fool's Day things and things like that. Are those often player introduced, or are they
Well, my job is to
inspired,
say yes, so I'll say,
or how do those go?
We're always encouraging our players to be themselves, certainly.
Yeah.
That is important. We don't want to be contrived. Now, there's some things that we've given players credit for, maybe that they didn't come up with, but but all in all, I mean, it's, you know, it's, that is the case. And I think my favorite thing, which sometimes ideas come when out of the blue and take 5 seconds, and those, like the Michael Harrington April Fool's prank, which was one of my favorite things over the years. And so I thought of that driving to Swope, so we pulled that together in about 30 minutes.
Wow.
But the best part of that was when we'd go on the road and everyone would meow at him. And I mean, it was if you guys haven't seen it out there, go check out. You can just Google Michael Harrington April Fool's prank. And but what we did with that is
a good one.
It made it to ESPN multiple times. And every year it still gets played as one of the best pranks. But it also made it into Maxim magazine, which is what the crux of the joke was. So those things are, you know, and listen, this is not about individuals or about me or about anyone else. I mean, it's about our team, our club, and our players. And so we want them to take the credit for that stuff.
So in some ways, though, you know, with sporting and being as big as they are now, do you sometimes long for the days when it was simpler?
I mean, long is probably the wrong word, but I mean, if you think of one of the better games we played was the Western Conference Championship in 2000 at Arrowhead, and it was a great game. We won, advanced to MLS Cup.
Right.
And the Mo Johnson bloody face and all that. And it was just funny where people didn't know that we had advanced because it was like a mini game series, but then another mini game on top of that. So it was all confusing. And it must have been confusing to fans too, because there were not many people in the crowd that night. And so to not experience that with all of Kansas City.
I was there. People,
yeah. I was there too.
So was I. So, but to not have a full crowd and chanting, I mean, that's disappointing, right? And so that's not what we're about. We're about creating memories and really being a fabric of the city. And so, you know, that's what we strive to do now, which we couldn't do back then. But, yeah, but still, yeah, I think very fondly about those times.
So when do you think that moment is where the rebrand happened and things started to change? Was there a moment where you're like, okay, things are different now. Things are going to be different. Was there a moment?
Well, yeah. So we went out to, and I spoke with every media person, and Dave Borchardt, I think, did as well. I think we just kind of hit all the different media people in the city to embargo what we were going to do. And we really wanted to resonate with the younger demographic. And so when media people like Jack Harry, who actually covered us for many, 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 many years, and he was at multiple different stations, TV and then radio, and Frank Bull and some of these people that came out on air and said they blasted the name. That was, we liked that. And so we were very confident and comfortable in our skin. And that is important, having, you know, a vision, but also being, you know, having the pride of what you're doing and hoping it works and having an idea and a plan and setting it forth. So it was, so when they started really not taking to the name, we had people defending it and then younger people, and it was gone on social media. And so it was actually worked out perfectly in that sense where we didn't want everyone to love it per se. It didn't matter. We knew what we wanted and we had a goal to get there, but it helped us when a different generation, people that weren't necessarily soccer enthusiasts, didn't like it and didn't understand it. Because again, it resonated more with people that did and wanted to be a part of it. And that's kind of how it grew. And Jack Harry actually said, one of the biggest mistakes they ever made was saying that was a bad name, because we sold more merchandise of Sporting in our first game than we did in seasons in the past. So there's not one aha moment, I don't think. And one thing, if you remember the first ever game at our stadium, we tied 0-0 in a pretty boring game when Chicago did not come to play at all. And Rob Hyman went on the radio and said, that's not who we are. That's not, again, being bold and confident and comfortable in your skin to do that is good. It's a good thing, because we never had that before. And so again, that pride starts building within everyone. And I remember we had an event at Crown Center. We were able to have one of the Lego models of our stadium built when Lego Lane was opening. And we had hundreds and hundreds of fans waiting to see it, and we had players there and stuff. And so I remember that being a moment,
right,
not the moment, of saying, wow, this is much different, because I can't tell you how many appearances and players I've schlepped around over the years when we go to a great sponsor and they put us in the back and, you know, maybe two people come up and say, what are you doing here? Who are you? Or whatever. Or in the past where we'd travel and for, my first 15 years, I did not miss one. I've never missed a home game ever in any of my career, but I didn't miss one road game either. And every time on the trips, people would stare at us and say who we are. What, you know, are you guys a musical group? Are you guys and to now where we're just signing autographs, taking pictures? And I mean, that's completely different. That is something that if you took a player from this team and threw him back in time, they would be like, they wouldn't understand. It's like two different things. In fact, we have probably many fans that think that we started in 2011, right. You know,
I think some do. Yeah.
And so, you know, to go back to your earlier question, to not know Preki, to not see his left foot, to not see the way he can dribble through people and cut back. And that is a shame. And those are great memories. And again, we've had so many former players that have played in World Cups and did great things for their countries and were great stewards and supporters of the city. They just weren't quite in the fabric as we are now.
Well, and that's why Retro Night is such a cool thing, so people can maybe get a glimpse at all of that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, back then we could do anything. We were, you know, we produced some horrifically awful, now great commercials.
Horrific. They were amazing.
Back then, I mean, having Tony Miola and Peter Vermes and Carrie Zavagnin and Tim Mulqueen in a cab Just yelling ba 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 yeah. over and over.
I meant to ask which one of those oldies was your favorite of all of them.
We had a funny one that Anheuser-Busch actually said we could not use of players doing one. In fact, being sued again, when we were the Kansas City Whiz, we were sued for our name. So not only did we not have the best name ever, we couldn't even use it anymore.
By a guy in New York, right?
Baltimore. I believe it was Baltimore yeah. Hardware Company. So yeah.
Same like, ballpark. Do the exact same thing. Interesting.
So, yeah, but my wife was in one commercial before we were dated. It was the retro commercial where they were doing like the, I don't know, they were dancing or doing something.
The
Mojo Time one?
The Mojo Time,
baby.
Wait, which one's your wife?
She's dancing with Chris Henderson in that one, so if you want to pull it up.
Okay.
Well,
fun fact, I like that.
That is a fun fact. Well, I think it's interesting that you talk about, you know, how throughout the entire rebrand, really trying to reach a younger demographic. And now, with Academy and kind of the pipeline that everyone talks about, bringing players like Busio, Kuzain up through that system, how much have they really helped reach that younger demographic even today?
Well, we hope so. We hope the pathway to the pros, we call it, and that's an important thing for us. In fact, we have Daniel Shalloway's sister, Anna Shalloway, is going to come. She's moving to Kansas City next week, and she's going to do Academy content. That coming back from the olden days where, you know, we're struggling every department. We'd have our league meetings, and if there's 10 teams, you'd have 10 PR people in the meetings. To not being able to move forward and having someone that just focusing on Academy content, that's shows the importance of it, but shows the growth as well of who we are. But reaching young people is great. We still have a high ceiling for where we are going. Our market in Kansas City, and I've been to every stadium in every city, old and new, our market is different than most of these. Our market really loves sporting. And their soccer knowledge and acumen is catching up to that. While other cities, it's a little different. A lot of soccer fans, longtime soccer fans in other cities, more of them per capita. And then they kind of fall in love with the team from there. So we're kind of flip-flopping here. I mean, like, you know, we go on the road and there's some markets that fans arrive 2 hours before the game just to watch warm-ups. You know, our fans like to be outside and hang out with each other before that. And so, you know, we can marry the two together. And as generations keep going forward, I think that's going to only more and more increase of the soccer knowledge. Because I remember, you know, back in the earlier days when, you know, ball would get played back to Uche Okafor and he'd blast it high and out of bounds and our fans would cheer like that was a good thing, like angling a football punt 44 yards out of bounds without a return. And so our fans would cheer. Now, at least, our fans know that possession is good, but there's still, you know, there's still ways to go, certainly. Yeah. In fact, I remember when we played Orlando City and Kaká was here and there was a bunch of fans that were waiting in the loading dock. I don't know what they were there for. And Kaká was walking the team bus, and Cesanovic was walking too, and all the fans ran past him to set to get his autograph or picture for the 800th time. and didn't know. I mean, so that just wouldn't happen in other places in the world, and certainly in not other markets. So, you know, it's great that our fans are so in tune with us and like us, and we don't mind. You know, if we lose, and people say you can't spell suck without SKC, that's not a bad thing. Having passion and either way is good. It really is.
So going back to, let's say, pre-rebrand, what were some marketing ideas that you mentioned, kind of alluded to one, that were thrown out but were quickly thrown away?
We didn't talk about this before, but if you remember the Wizmeister, was that his name?
Yardmeister.
Zardmeister.
Yeah, the Zardmeister.
So that was from Lamar Hunt, and so...
Wow.
Listeners out there don't remember, he would have a microphone, he was sat behind one of the goals, and he would start with chants, but the chants were really
bad.
Not, I mean, like, me likey, me yola, me likey, me yola. And so you want the fans to say the same things, and it just did not work at all. That was Lamar's idea, and Lamar was great in so many ways, and he was really in tune. But
not marketing.
No, he was just different. He came from a different era of marketing and but I mean, he was actually ahead of his time in some. We had a Zard card that we put little kiosks in the stadium and that was years ahead of the time of trying to do fan engagement and rewards and whatnot. So some things land, some things don't, and Zardmeister did not land. So yeah, he was.
I remember that. I remember booing him.
That was, yeah. Not many cheered for him. I can tell you that. So I don't know. I can't. That might have been 2001 or two or somewhere in there. But yeah, luckily he was not long for the for our club.
No, like one season, maybe.
I think not less than that. Yeah.
So you've been around for a long time. Like that's, I mean, 1997, not many, especially
sadly,
in this kind of industry.
Both,
in this industry, though, you know, there is oftentimes a lot of turnover, transferring, switching jobs. What is the one thing that's made you stay?
Oh, geez. I mean, when you put the investment in so many different ways, whether it's time or energy, but mostly relationship-wise and caring. And I mean, that's the biggest thing. You've had such a vast pride. When I go to the games, I know so many fans, I recognize so many people at the games, and you know, it's just one big family. And so, you know, but I mean, I've known Peter for, I mean, now going on almost 20 years when he came in the first time. I've known Kerry for the same amount of time, and so you're just around these people. I mean, it's just, you know, you wouldn't want to look anyway because you're so close to them, but you still want to see there's still more to go for us. People, we don't ever sit back on our laurels and say we've made it. By no means. But again, we're not competing with anyone else either anymore. Back in the olden days, we used to say, oh, we need to do this because we're losing out to said entertainment property or sports team. But we're just trying to be the best version of who we can be, and that's great enough for us, but there's still always work to be done, and that's exciting. We're still building. We're builders, and that's what we'll always be.
And with all that experience, too, you know, you're an expert now in your job as – in communications and working with the sports team, what would your advice be to someone kind of looking to pave the same path that you have and build those same relationships?
Well, you have to work hard, certainly, but I mean, there's no simple solution. I mean, there's, you know, I think having a long career in something, if you're passionate for something, you're going to do well and you're going to stay in there. And then if you have the opportunity to take a risk or take less money at the beginning. I mean, we made terrible salaries at the beginning. I mean, I made $12,000 a year with no insurance when I first started. So if you're able to sacrifice some things to do that and be a bigger fish in a smaller sea and do these things, I mean, I've had my hand in every different department here pretty much. I mean, no one's an expert in anything, I don't think. There's always something you learn. There's always something you can do. But the biggest thing I have is I have no fear. I can call up anyone. We can try anything, and when you have ownership that is excited for you to take on challenges, that's a great place to work. So most people don't have that; they feel limited or they don't want to do that. But we're encouraged to get out of our box and try different things. So you know, I mean, that's sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't, but you try to celebrate the wins.
Okay, those are all happy times. Can you think of a particularly stressful day, perhaps, you know, without names? You don't have to call anybody out, obviously.
Well, crisis communications is in my realm for sure. We've, you know, you deal with these things. Nothing that's been unmanageable over the years. I mean, you know, we used to be Live Strong Sporting Park or Live Strong Sporting Park.
Oh, yeah.
So that was a sketchy time for sure for a little bit, but actually the stuff came out right when we were getting with Ivy funds for our jersey sponsor. So you kind of remember the good times too, because we invited them down to the draft to unveil our jersey at the exact same time that we're going through the breakup.
With Lance Armstrong.
So I mean, there's always, you're always managing everything, but no, I mean, we're fortunate that I can only think of a couple unnamed players over the years that have been a problem for organization. Nothing unmanageable because they weed themselves out anyway. We had someone that didn't understand social media as a draft pick in, I don't know, 09 or 10, somewhere in there, that did some pretty bad stuff, and so he ended up being cut, you know, after 2 weeks. But, you know, I more remember the days like we crashed a couple of vans in the olden days. The players did in preseason. We had players maybe not drinking water on the bench for games. You know, there's the olden days were just a different world. It just really, I can't even explain it.
Players having a smoke at halftime.
Yeah, that's what I was about to say.
Well, that was the Chicago Fire. If you went to their locker room at halftime back in the 2000 when we played them, and they had an unbelievable team. I mean, really one of the better teams in MLS history.
And
Kubik, and oh my gosh. Yeah. Yes, the first European crew. They like to partake in some.
So,
cigarettes at half.
Lynn Dawson style.
Oh yeah, exactly.
That
yeah,
this was,
well, they would shower. But yeah, it was, but that you know that 2000 team was really a fun year. That was a great year because everything was a complete shift of organization. I mean, Ron Newman was an unbelievable coach, and I was very close with him and his family. But the first part of the league, I mean, DC United was very very good, and we had good players. We played a style, but we had no set identity truly. You know, Preki was a throwaway for us. Ron Newman grabbed him from the indoor leagues and ended up being one of the better players in MLS history, fortunately, because he was really what kept our games afloat. But we had, you know, every team was allowed the first year as a one player, and ours was Mike Sorber from St. Louis.
There you go.
And
can't escape it.
And he was, you know, he wasn't a great fit for our league, and it just didn't work out all that well for us, and we were fortunate to have other players like Mo Johnston and Preki and Digital Takawira and Uche Okafor and some of these older guys, Sean Bowers, you know, and but characters too. You know, we had another Scottish guy that was quite a character on the team back in the days, and we had Mike Amen who was, and Chris Nick are both the keepers. Keepers usually are
a little
different. Now Tim Melia is about the least different
right.
keeper we've ever had. But we've had some.
He's about as straight laced as Matt is.
We had Chris Snicka one time, and when in '99 when we had he had a Halloween party, and he did every year at his house, and invited Coach Gansler, who was never really socialized or did anything with the team, and so the doorbell rings, we're all in there, the doorbell rings, and he opens it, and Bob Gansler and his wife Nancy were dressed as cowboy and cowgirl. It wasn't a costume party.
Oh my.
So he walked in for 1 second and was so mad, walked out. And the next day, the guys had to run the whole practice.
Oh,
so, but man, there's so many fun stories in the old days, and we talk about retro that just would not happen now. Whether it was a training, we used to have 3-day trainings in preseason. That would never happen now. One training we had that Ron Newman had was just throw-in training.
Oh,
if you try to get our guys now to go out to a throw-in training, I mean, that just wouldn't happen. It's just like unheard of. And so I tell a story a lot, but we did the guys went out. The guys used to enjoy the social life way more back then, because back then if you saw our players, if you looked at the 99 team photo compared to the 2019 team photo 20 years later, the body types are completely different. I mean, if Chet were to do the body fats on anyone, and Chet had made plenty of side dollars on maybe skewing some of the body fats from the olden days, the metrics are so different. Anyway, so we had a 2-mile run that the players were going to do, and we were in Bradenton, Florida, and Ron Newman wanted me to the finish line and said, "I'll call you when we start, and then we'll drive down, Guy and I will drive down, his son, and meet you down there and watch the guys finish." Anyway, so the guys had gone out. We had all gone out the night before, very late. And so Ron calls me. But before him, Mo Johnston says, "Hey, Robo, like, help us out here. We can't be finishing in, you know, 2-mile run in 36 minutes. It's not going to, like, come on." So I was like, I'll delay it a little bit and then start it. Anyway, so Ron calls me. Guy and Ron come down there, and you know, the guys are jogging in, finishing line. But I'd started the stopwatch evidently way too late, because Jake Dancy was the first one to finish, and he finished in about 9 minutes for 2-mile run, maybe 9 minutes and 20 seconds. And then people start, but if you just watch the optics of it, he was just trotting along. So I must have waited 10 minutes. I don't know what the difference was. Anyway, so Ron Newman changed our formation after this,
based on it,
he says the fastest team he's ever had, and so I finally, after 4 days, had to fess up and say that I might have fudged the old buttons on the thing. But Jake Dancy actually got moved from left back to forward, so his nickname has been Striker ever since. So he actually moved back to Kansas City with his family, and his son's going to be in the academy now. So it all comes full circle. I talk to all these guys still. I talk to so many former players. If you ever see me, if you're driving and I pass you, I'm always on my phone. and I'm always that's the time I always talk to a lot of former players. So I still keep in contact with many, many, many folks from over the years.
And you've seen a lot of players over the years. Who's been this? What was like the hardest goodbye when a player left?
The hardest goodbye.
Yeah.
I mean, players. Well, first and foremost, our objective is to win. Winning is our number one business model, no matter what. So if rarely has a player been here, and soccer is a not as sentimental as maybe a baseball is, where baseball players kind of stay for a couple of years too long because they're well liked. And soccer, you can't have that.
Right.
And so when players leave, it's probably time that they might have. I mean, I've been a groomsman in 8 players' weddings. So I've been very close with
8.
Wow.
With players over the years. So, when I first started, I was very, very young, and I was just the same age as all the players, and so we were all kind of very close. So and then toward the 2000 eras, I was really close with, guys like Brandon Prideaux and Chris Brown and Carey and that crew. And then after that, I was very tight with Davey Arnault and Jack Jewsbury and Josh Wolf and Jimmy Conrad. And then, now I kind of really spend a lot of time with Matt Beisler and Graham Zuzzi and Cessanovic. And so it's all, again, it's one big kind of family, but I don't think there's been one time where I've said I'm super sad because it just happens. And I still see him. The soccer world is very small, so I still see. And, in fact, a lot of former players and a lot of coaches in the league. And, every time we play the Galaxy, I see Chris Klein. I mean, Mike Burns was just here last week with New England. I mean, so you run into all these guys over the time, so you really there's no sentimentally. But Bob Gansler probably is the one that we were very, very close and someone I really – really respect, and so I'm glad he's doing well. But I'm trying to bring him back this summer for a game. So I always like seeing him. It's always one of my favorite people to see and talk to.
Yeah, it would be good to see him back. And also speaking about Ron Newman earlier, is there any way we can get some memorial to him in the stadium somewhere?
I know, right? He deserves it. He's.
Yeah, he wasn't as winning a coach or.
I think it was 50. I think it was 50-50 all time. But those. He did a lot for. I mean, he was so enthusiastic. No one loved soccer more than Ron. Ron was he was always so happy. He was joyous on the field. He was a character off the field. I mean, he was really a special personality. And unlike our current manager, Ron didn't necessarily like defending. He would love a 4-4 game, and Peter wasn't overly thrilled with our last result. So, yeah. I mean, different. I mean, he came from the indoor side. Ron did. So he likes the high scoring stuff. But, which is always have to remind Peter that Peter was a forward for the bulk of his career.
Mm-hmm. So people forget that. But yeah, one of the favorite videos of Ron was I think he was like threatening to fight the entire other team in one of those.
He defended his guys. He really, really did. He loved some of his, I mean, he loved Paul Wright, if anyone remembers that name.
Oh yeah.
Played indoor for San Diego Soccers.
And the Baltimore Blast, I think, is the fastest goal in indoor history. I think 2 or 3 seconds.
Well, I have a story
which is crazy.
He was super quick.
He was very fast. But it'd be funny to see, because people always try to compare generations. Would he be fast on this team that we have now? Because I mean, is Jer so fast? I mean, like, I don't know. Comparatively,
yes,
he looked so much
fast.
I mean, it's faster than Paul Wright, because Paul Wright was fast. But I think this group of players is, I mean, first of all, I know they're much faster, but I just don't know where a player like Paul Wright, who was really fast, like Ryan Tinsley was just here for speed, really. But I think he'd be in the bottom half of our team.
On if you're timing
on speed. That's right. No one can run 9 miles or 9 minute to 2 miles.
That's almost impossible to do that comparison. I mean, people do that with like baseball and every other sport, but
it's hard. I know people would Babe Ruth do well now. No one knows.
With modern training techniques, would he be different? And could he handle?
I mean, I can unequivocally say that everything. I mean, there was so much more space on the field in the olden days. If you watch any highlights. People can just dribble through anywhere. I mean, that just does not happen anymore. Our league is completely different in that realm. And there were some sloppy goals in the old days, and that was kind of what was endearing, And now there's some really great. I mean, all you have to do is look at the top. We used to do a top 50 goals. I think the league did every year for I mean, if you look at the top 50 goals then compared to now, I mean, the tactics and everything else, the techniques are much sharper now.
I actually have some of those DVDs that have those on there.
Yeah, I mean, the league has grown so much. I mean, it's kudos to all the new ownership that have come in and done some really spectacular things. I think it started with, you know, Toronto coming in and really just hitting a different market, Seattle coming in and really putting emphasis in marketing. They spent, I think, $1.2 million the first year in marketing, and so that made everyone else have to catch up, and that was important. The league needed that, and so, you know, all these different things that have happened that keep increasing what we're doing, and Commissioner Garber's done a tremendous job of expansion and getting the right places, and so exposing the sport to more areas, and now the academies. I mean, that's the next step, is academies are now have been catching up, you know, the last 4 years, and I mean, I remember the olden days when we had, you know, we'd have reserve games, and those reserve games were basically, I mean, trying to squeeze out anyone you could possibly find to play in those, and it was, you'd play them at 10 in the morning the day after a game on the road. So if we played in Chicago, we'd play at night on a Saturday night, we'd play at 10 in the morning the next day on Sunday. Well, you're just trying to find people that didn't go out all night and didn't go out on the field and try to do it. I mean, Chance Myers, I think, was the leading goal scorer in the reserve league one season.
I remember that.
I watched a few of those reserve games, and I know I saw staffers in them.
But John Cott did make one appearance. We actually, Jeff Miles, we actually flew in from a bachelor party in Las Vegas to play in one. We're in L.A., and we put him at left wing, and it was about 100 degrees out, and he was... He did well. He actually played well, but he was not. He was struggling by the 60th minute. Yeah.
Okay, so I've got one for you. It's no secret that this team is very well media trained. All of these guys do very. You know, we like to poke fun at Matt Beisler for sometimes seeming a bit robotic. He's just, they're all very well media trained, and that's a credit to you. I imagine other teams' management have to be very envious of.
We don't want robotic. In fact, we talk all the time. We want personalities to show. Jimmy Nielsen wasn't robotic, but he had personality.
Oh, yeah.
I love talking to him after games.
Right. He was great because he said, some players that come from overseas, it takes a while. So when you have Johnny Russell, who's not used to meeting in the locker rooms and all these stuff, he's still a little reserved, and we're trying to do the opposite, actually. We're trying to break him out of his shell. For that, we want people to showcase their stuff because, again, we are confident in what we're doing and what our team is and who we are. And so, you know, I actually encourage them to be, you know, more, I guess, open or transparent. Yeah. Or not, that's probably the wrong word, but more emotional or more show themselves more. Because Johnny Russell, away from cameras, is the biggest prankster on the team by far. Yeah. And then you know, he's more buttoned up, certainly. And you know, Felipe Gutierrez did an interview a couple of days ago, and he was way different than he'd ever been, and that was a good step for him because he's got a good story to tell.
So who is one player throughout your long tenure here that made you nervous when he would speak to the media? Who's one that you were nervous slip up?
Nick Garcia was, I don't say nervous is the right word, but he could talk and then keep going down a path he probably didn't. You're probably worried about. Yeah. Tony Mill he was great with media. Tony Mill was fantastic with media. But he would go on shows like with Johnny Dare. I'm not nervous with Mill, but when you go on with some people, like, you don't know where the topics are going to go because they'd always stray away from soccer. And so then you don't have control over what's going to come out next. So, but there's really.
How about like Dom Dwyer? I imagine he.
Dom is a interesting story. I mean, he became more reserved as his time.
Definitely.
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so people think he's difficult, but he was a good teammate. And if you notice anything about Dom, he always worked hard on the field. He's in a situation now I think he wishes he were back here.
Probably.
You know, that's true. That actually is true. People that want to leave, you know, do come back or want to come back, and that's a testament to the club and the stuff we do, because we really want to take care of them, because they're, again, they're our biggest asset, and winning is our primary focus on the soccer and the business side. But there's no one really that I'd be nervous about.
One good question that came to my mind is Kai Kamara has had trouble in almost every other locker room he has been in. Did you see something in particular that, like, what do you think about this team made it work so well?
Well, you have to understand your players. So Kai Kamara, there was a game we played the Galaxy, and if you Googled worst miss in soccer.
Oh, I know the one.
So the ball is skittling across a goal mouth, probably going in, and not only did he not tap it in, he slipped and then landed on with his hand for
a handball.
Handballing free kick the opposite way.
Christian Ramirez had one almost as bad, like just
well,
last
so,
week.
So that was a tough thing to do, and so we had to manage through that game. We played in D.C. the following week, and he scored a very, very, very good goal. And I called ESPN and said, hey, here's a clip from Kai Kamara. And they're like, oh, we have a lot of clips. I'm like, you got to run this clip. And they ran it, I think it was like number 6-7, somewhere in there, in the top plays. And so we did an article about, hey, listen, you can have a tough day at the office like he did 1 week ago and then come back and be in the top 10 the next week. And so managing through that was a good story and a positive story. And it really helped Kai out and it showcased how good he was. And listen, goal scorers especially, having an ego is a good thing. Like, exactly. You don't want a shy, sad, bashful
for sure.
Goal scorer. They're not going to do that well, I don't think.
Exactly.
So you have to – those – you know, and typically, when things are going really well, they're a little more squirrely. So, like Eddie Johnson was that way for sure. He had back to back hat tricks and was grouchy after the second game. And so you just have to go. You just have to understand these little nuances and work through it. And you know, if that means they need to take an extra couple minutes to compose themselves and really think about that, then so be it.
Usually they're way more talkative when they're on a good goal scoring streak. The best interview I ever got with Josh Wolf was he had like 7 games where he scored like 5 goals over 7 games. That was like the best interview I ever got with him.
So Josh is completely different. Now he was just in town. He spent 4-5 days in Kansas City.
Yeah, I saw him I think last week or the week before.
And so he's completely different. Now I still talk to Josh a lot. I've been very close with him over the years, and now he's all about soccer, which is funny. But, you know, Josh, there's some players that are just completely honest about themselves and with themselves. Josh was one of those players. He knew that when we played at Community America Ballpark, that wasn't the best stadium, that wasn't the best field for him. He didn't work well in tight spaces. He was, you know, he's 5'8", 152 pounds probably, so he needed space, and that's how he was. So he actually told our coach at the time that, and so they put in Birham Diop for one game, and he had a hat trick in that game. So that Josh Wolf actually noticed that before that. So you know, these are the little stories that always come up that people don't know about. But Josh Wolf was very in tune with himself and with soccer and how it all related.
I'm just glad we got one Diop reference in with this regiment.
Yeah, well, he came. Well, we picked him up. He was a He'd played soccer for the club team or something in New York, and then he was he worked at a department store, a clothing store in New York, and that's where he found him. And then he came here and had one great game. I mean, he was a different player, but again, would he make the team now? I don't think so at all.
I seriously,
right? I don't know where.
Didn't he follow Octavio?
Yeah, he did.
He was like with two different teams. Octavio was on before that. What was his last name?
Zambrano,
yeah. He was like with two different teams, and then he disappeared after he left here. I think he like coaching some team in the upper like northeast somewhere, and then I haven't seen any reference to him since then.
Yeah, Octavio, so we played in the All-Star game in 2000. So in 2000, we had started off very, very strong. We started 10-0-2 that season, and so we had a lot of All-Stars that year. And Gansler, who did not like the pageantry of All-Star games, coached the West, and Octavio actually coached the East, and it was a shame of a game. There was lots of goals, and Gansler was another coach that didn't like giving him goals ever. So he actually put Tony Mello up top so I remember Octavio and he were completely different personalities and different people. Actually, I have the meal. I don't keep. You know, I've not been a big collector ever, and I wish maybe I should have. And I was a ball boy for the Royals when I was growing up. So I was actually a ball boy for the Royals in 1985 when they won the World Series over St. Louis. I've never been that way. But I do actually. One of the things I have is I have Miola's All-Star number one field jersey when we played that game.
Wow.
It's so, crazy
somewhere,
you
somewhere,
did
my
collect
basement.
Things. Your house
I know.
Be a mecca. Well,
I guess,
sports.
But my we.
You would be unmatched.
Yeah, but that's just not me.
I guess Vermees would have quite the collection also.
He's not. He is. He too is not a collector of.
I don't.
That
stuff.
Does not surprise me.
I would venture to guess that his house is cleaner than mine, though.
All right, Robo. Like so, two-part question.
Yeah.
All right. And okay. So I imagine you've met a variety of characters over the time, and some who came in, you're probably like, oh, this is going to be an adjustment or tough for this person. So first part. Are coaches more difficult in that area, their adjustment coming to Kansas City, or is it players? How do you go on that end?
I mean, adjustments are like Latif Blessing came here the beginning of last season, two seasons ago,
yeah.
And he was really needed help with adjusting to
right.
America, to a new league, to being by himself, to everything. In fact, we went out to dinner in preseason. We were in Tucson, and Latif walked in. We had already sit. There's me and probably four or five of the guys. We're sitting down eating, and he ordered a pizza, but ordered it with he wanted a pizza with no sauce and no cheese. And so we're sitting there, and we're like, and so like we're like, what do we do? Like,
what's about
how do
to
we,
come out right?
Yeah. So Matt Beasler got up and explained to him. You know, this is what pizza is. This is how you order. And so, you know, and Latif at the time had never had Dr. Pepper. So he went to get a drink and taste a little Dr. Pepper and then thought, oh my God, this is the best thing I've ever experienced in my life. Yes. And so he filled up these huge. And so Matt again had explained, hey, soda is really bad for soccer players, which is funny, which is one thing that's different. Like, I've never seen players drinking soda or stuff. I mean, it's just eating bread. I mean, these things are. That happened retro-wise a long time ago. It was commonplace, but now I don't. So he really needed help. A lot of guys took him under their wing and helped him out. And so that was much. It's much better for him that he was here first rather than going to L.A. first. I think probably helped him out. But really, no. I mean, there's not much adjusting. Sometimes, you know, now we have players don't have cars, so they have to get picked up and whatnot. But you know, Roger Espinoza does an unbelievable job. With bridging the gap of everyone on our team, there's, you know, whether anyone comes in from whatever he is a, you know, this team is all together. So if you watch us eating our team meals, whatever open seats there, that's where the player takes. They don't sit in cliques. They don't sit in groups. That's how it's always been. I mean, it's really been phenomenal, and it's so much different. Every player that comes here from a different team says that's the one thing they notice how different that is. That everyone just you sit with anyone and you get along. And I mean, it's just completely different. Metric than any other club has, and Roger's a really, really big advocate of that. But again, coaches get credit because the coaches set the culture and they bring the players in, and they've, you know, if you don't fit into the culture, they move on, and that's just how it works.
I was actually just about to ask you who that person was because I've heard it was Roger. He's been that guy that
he's phenomenal. All the guys are, but he really, really, really is. He's invaluable in that area, and people. In Salt Lake, and people think that Roger's unbelievably nice, and what a great guy. And I know people say that about a lot of players that are in their markets, that you don't know, and whatnot. But he really is. He is misunderstood. Peter Vermes is misunderstood too. People think that Peter's yells all the time and grouchy. Peter's got a great personality, and
Peter's hilarious.
Yeah,
like,
he
Peter's
is.
One of the funniest.
I mean, but he wants to be happy. He wants to be, you know. I mean, he wishes he was happy all the time. Even things that make him not happier. You know, bad defending, or you know, or some other things, but
questions from the media.
Yeah.
No, but he doesn't even get mad. No, he doesn't really ever get mad at that either.
So okay, you mentioned Roger. Let's accept the present team. So besides the present team, what player in the history of your tenure has epitomized the Sporting spirit or Kansas City spirit the most on and off the field?
I mean, we talked about Jimmy Nielsen earlier. Jimmy Nielsen wanted to win. He was a team-first guy. He did not care if he had a shutout. He did not care about any of that stuff. He wanted to win, and he held everyone accountable for that, and that's kind of embodies who we are. Winning is a team-first. It doesn't matter else. And once you win, you celebrate with everyone, and then the next day you move on and really focus for the next week. And that There's been lots of guys like that over the years. I mean, Mo Johnston was a great – he was a gamer. He wanted to win so much. Peter Vermes, when he came here, brought a different mindset. I mean, so again, we went from 8-24 in 99 to winning our only supporter shield in 2000, and that's a change of culture, and that's hard to do, but that's the addition of Peter Vermes and Kerry Zavagnin, and, you know, Chris Henderson was a good leader, but he'd been there before too, and so was Chris Klein, and adding new pieces. But that, you know, that back then, their training sessions were much different. Now, their training sessions were very competitive, and if you won that day in training, if you're in a small-sided game and your team, the blue team won, they would own it the rest of the day. And so it was, every day was a big competition. I mean, you had competitive guys. We always have. Matt McEwen was very competitive. Miklos Molnar was very competitive. I mean, so you had a lot of guys that wanted to win. And so, you know, those are ones that stay here and do well and you gravitate towards. Davey Arnault, I mean, no one embodies wanting to win more than Davey did.
And everything.
In everything. I mean, yeah. Cards. I've played plenty of card matches with him, too.
He's probably the single guy I've seen in the most confrontations in practice. And he'd be buddy-buddy with the guy after that moment. But.
Oh, yeah. He was fiery, for sure. And this generation is a little different than that one.
Yeah.
This generation's less confrontational, might be the wrong word, but they're not. That's not how they're built as much, and I know it's one thing that always trying to monitor and see, because I think healthy competition is good, but how far as that goes is where you're looking at.
That's a big credit to Vermes for adapting to that too, because he's a different guy, but he's adapted to that for the newer generation.
Being a coach for a long period of time is not easy. It's not, because we've seen in all sports, being a player's coach might work for 4 months. But it's not. It doesn't work for the long run. It just does not. You can't be a player's coach. Maybe in baseball, maybe, because all you're trying to do is manage stuff. But it just does not work. So you have to balance that with being an authoritarian, but also knowing when to pull the strings and when not to. And that's it's very psychological. Bob Kanzer was great at, if you're winning, he was hard on you. If you were not, he was not. He was lighter. But you know, one of my favorite Bob Kanzer nuances is, after every training, the players would stretch. And Bob wasn't huge on compliments to players, but he would dribble around a soccer ball around the circle the guys are stretching. And if you had a good training while you're stretching, he would nutmeg you. And so people would do these long lunges trying to get nutmeg. They'd pass him by and all these things. But so those are the fun things you look for. But I just remember one time that we had a defender named Todd Jenkins on this roster. And Bob wanted to get to know the players more, and because 99, he was very hard on the guys, some players, Scott Uteritz and players like that. And so he wanted to change that in next year. So Taj Jenkins was on our team. And so Coach Ganza went over and said, you know, he knew that Taj loved the outdoors, and he's a former number one pick overall, I think, in Colorado. And he asked Taj about outdoors, and Taj says, oh, yeah, I love it so much. I'd much rather win the Bass Pro Fishing title than the MLS Cup.
Oh, wow.
And so Gaines like, I'm not talking to players ever. Like, this is exactly why I don't do it. I can't take this anymore. So
we've talked about pundits. You know, we know how they are. We've talked about, coaches, players. But what about fans? Has there ever been an instance where a fan has messaged you with just some ludicrous idea or thought?
Yeah. There's one that stands out.
You're like, really?
Yes. I got an email, a long email, from a fan that said, his son's team lost in a U10 and U9 game, 8-0. And after everyone of the 8 goals, their team celebrated. And they must have gotten that from us when we celebrate when we score goals. So can you please tell your players not to celebrate? And I said, and I was like,
that is great.
Dear so and so, yes, I for sure will tell our players not to celebrate, because scoring goals is a horrible thing, and we don't want to do ever, like.
Wow. And it's our fault.
It's not even that, like, oh my gosh, this can't be where we're headed. And so luckily those emails are semi few and far between, but we get some people that I don't take it. I don't know. Just maybe need to reset their perspective a little bit, but very rarely. We have unbelievable fans, and we want to have a great relationship with them. But that one really, really stood out, because it was a really long email, and I do read them, because you have to, But I did tell him that was probably not going to happen.
Okay, so we're coming up on an hour, which I thank you very much for staying this long. So we'll let you go soon. But I wanted one thing that gets everyone angry in this MLS world we live in is I wanted to get your thoughts on promotion and relegation ever. I'm not talking in 5 years. I mean ever. Would you like to, or do you think promotion?
It's not what it's not whether I like to or not, but it would never happen.
Never will happen.
It will never. Okay. It will okay. never happen. It just will not. So it doesn't matter if I want it to or I think it's a great idea. I mean, on paper, sure, it'd be fun for a little bit maybe, but it's not. We're not built that way. We're completely different than other leagues in the world, and you know our fans are different because it's not. There's a lot of options in America, first of all, but we're not. Built that way, and that's fine. I mean, I tell a story. If you could play, you could watch a game overseas, and there'd be a great sequence starting from the keeper, plays to the right back to the center back, plays it to the center mid, switches out right, long crossover, switching fields to the left side, plays it back to center mid, through ball, shot that goes over the crossbar, and their fans would cheer like crazy.
Yeah.
Our fans would be like, "How could you miss that shot?"
Yeah.
I mean, we're just built. It's just we see the game differently. It's just different. It doesn't mean it's better or worse. It's just how we are. It's just.
So even if they okay, how many teams do you see them stopping at, or do you see them stopping?
I mean, they said recently 30 teams. That seems like a good number. And
yeah, but I don't think they'll stop there. I think they'll keep.
There's no way of knowing. I mean, maybe you know we there's enough work to do, and 30 teams is. I mean, listen, a lot of markets want soccer, which is great because that was not the case. 20 years ago, right? So,
and that's got to be one of the most amazing things for you, for me, that's been around since day one of this league, obviously in different roles, but just watching the explosion of soccer over the last decade.
I mean, going to the game, traveling all the games, I mean, we, you know, playing the Miami Fusion in Lockhart Stadium, which looks like a high school field, and it was dimly lit, and you know, or going to San Jose, playing San Jose State when the field was 54 yards wide. I mean, so, you know, and you think to now is yeah, I mean, it's fantastic. But, you know, we've made so many strides. There's still, as I said, there's teams that we still need to step up in many areas, and that's a good goal. We don't want to grow just for the sake of growing and overpopulate. But, you know, I guess the positive thing about growing is that there's hundreds of thousands of great soccer players in the world. There are not hundreds of thousands of great basketball players, football players, and other that could play in the NBA. So we do have a different pool to pull from. But, you know, I think one thing you'll see moving forward is you'll see more the scouting and everything else will continue to grow with teams and us included.
I know I've seen a bunch of the new teams that are coming in come through Kansas City to check out what you guys do, how you do it. Is that kind of a point of pride that you have so many others?
It is, because it's not only just the stadium, and the stadium was really ahead of its time and great, but it's also we keep mentioning culture. It's also the culture, how can you build something that's sustainable and lasts, and that's important. So when we talk to all these teams, and we do talk to many teams, their one takeaway, they want to understand how we could do that. And Peter Vermes is a very big part of that, and you know, Cliff Hillig and Mike Hillig and Greg Maday and Rob Heineman and Pat Grant are big parts of that. I mean, so there's lots of different components.
So you have to just be like, find your own Peter Vermes, and then you'll make it work.
Yeah, yeah, it's not easy. That's not, but you know, and that works for us. But it's, you know, again, go back to the first word I said, vision. You have to have a strong vision that makes sense, and you know, we are. Vested in other teams doing well, succeeding. We're a single entity league, so we succeed when other teams do well too. So, you know, there is this camaraderie. You know, while we do have some secret sauce that we don't want to necessarily give up, that we do share lots of information with other teams.
So after 22 some odd years, you know, you've talked to me personally about, you know, it's a lot of hours, etc. You got a family, but what keeps you excited about coming to work every day?
Winning
now after 22 years, winning,
winning,
okay, yeah,
winning, winning trumps everything. It's the only thing I've. Concretely know that winning is better than losing. That's all the things I've learned. It's still the one thing I'm 100% absolute on. You know, you get to celebrate with the team and the fans, and there's no better feeling than, you know, watching them at home swaying back and forth, chanting and singing, and that's, well, I mean, that's never gonna get old, ever. Yeah, that's
sure. Out of all those winning moments, which one was the favorite? 2000?
Oh, you know, my job is different because you have to, you know, I'm in work mode. Aaron Heifetz for the 99 Women's World Cup, when he ran in his vest and jumped on the pile to celebrate, and that is not in the PR manuals to do. Right. And Aaron Heifetz is a great person and still is with the women's national team and does some good stuff.
He's a great guy with those guys.
He is, but you know, that's not something, you know. Actually, I think the women's team framed that vest that he wore and gave it to him many years later. Anyway, so we still have to be, you know, whether winning or losing, you still have to do that. Now, I remember being, you know, PKs are obviously very nerve-wracking. You hate for them to come down to that, but it's fortunate that we were on the positive end on many of those.
Too many times.
So those are really because everything stopped, and so you're really focused on that. I think both the MLS Cup wins were great. 2000, when they put 6 minutes of stoppage time up, and watching Gansler, I mean, with no goal scored and four subs and no injuries in the second half, and putting 6 minutes of stoppage time was tough, but that made it even better. When we barely were fighting and clawing and barely held on, was great. And then obviously the penalty kicks in 2013 were being at home.
The cold.
Yeah, everything. Watching, yeah, I mean, that was, you know.
Beer slushies.
I don't remember being cold. I was outside for a bulk of the second half, and so yeah. But just the crowd and the noise, and I mean, I just remember the flood of people on the field after the game, and people yelling at me from the league office, get everyone off. I'm like, what in the world?
How?
Yeah. Is there a tarp I can throw over? I mean, like, I can't get them off.
You're supposed to lasso them, Lobo.
So. I mean, but every win. I mean, you know, when you struggle and then you come back and win. I mean, there's minor victories too. I remember a game after Peter took over. We didn't win, but we played very well, and we hadn't played well at that point, and that was a big moment. I remember, and so there was a change. Again, there was a change of changing the guard and whatnot. So there's little things that that somehow just stick and whatnot.
Right. We've kept you for a long time, and I do appreciate that. So we probably need to let you go so you can go home. You're welcome to stay around longer.
We're planning on doing another podcast. I don't know if we're going to make that happen.
I was literally just thinking, I'm like, to bring it back to St. Louis, my St. Louis Blues are about to drop the puck
right now. I'm ready for the Blues.
I got the remote ready to turn off. Okay.
All right. Well, thanks, Robo. And
yeah,
I really
thanks
appreciate it. And
thanks, everyone.
We need to have you on like a regular, like once a month guest because there's a lot of stuff that
even get the four of us together once a month consistently.
But no, now that you got here, I realize like how many questions we have for you. So
write them down because I'm pretty open and I have a pretty good memory about things when you're around. This long and
I mean, there's like 1,000 questions. You know, like what's the worst meal that you ever ate in the road? Or
well, I can tell you that. I can tell you the worst meal. We in '98 preseason. We're in limited budgets. We ate every meal at Olive Garden. We had one of three choices for 6.5 straight weeks in preseason.
So it was like a deal with Olive Garden.
We made a deal with Olive Garden for a set fee and. Like we had to put signs up at our training facility. Whatever
we had
to do.
Sticks,
that's what I'm saying. So I can't even smell Olive Garden now. He still goes back because you literally have one. I mean, like you don't realize how that's a lot of.
That's a lot.
A lot of. But you know, now we. I mean, can you imagine our players like Peter and our nutritionist and our fitness folks would be like Olive Garden? You can't eat. That's not really befitting of an athlete. We ate there every lunch.
Way too many carbs.
Yeah.
See, like, I, on the other hand, I'm like,
I'm kind of hungry.
I say that now.
All right, thanks, man.
Yeah, this was fun.
We will hopefully talk to you soon.
You got it.
Am I going to outro this thing?
Yeah, give us a woo right now.
Woo!
When we celebrate, when we lose, we swear. It's not a night for the faint of heart, so all you gents beware. But it's a football night. But it's a football night. We can gather all our friends all around the tomb. That's not a better thing to do. But it's a football night. But it's a football night.
whistle blows, we're gonna celebrate tonight. When the final whistle blows, we're gonna celebrate tonight. When the final whistle blows, you know we're gonna feel alright.